The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud progeny of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. Christmas is coming up, so Merry Christmas to all those who celebrate it. And to the rest of you, Merry Gravmas, and may the FSM bless you with his noodly appendage, ramen. The year 2022 is coming to a close. We've had the midterm election here in the United States. President Trump has announced his intention to run for office again. Fairness is starting to come back to social media, and especially Twitter. And there's plenty of drama going on with all of those things. Well, we're going to focus on some things involving a lot less drama. Hunting season is upon us. That means people are going to go out hunting. That typically means rifles. We're going to talk about three popular cartridges for that purpose. All of them 30 caliber. They are as follows. The 308 Winchester, the 30-06 Springfield, and the 7.62x54R Russian. First two pretty much need no further introduction. You've heard of them plenty of times. The third, though, well, you may be familiar with it if you've seen the movie Enemy at the Gates. Like the 30-06, the 7.62x54R Russian also fought against and killed many, many Nazi soldiers during World War II. We'll be talking about a Mosin-Nagant refurbished project that I've been working on. Yes, it is worth it to refurbish certain Mosin-Nagants, if you're in the right situation. That'll be our third segment of this episode. We'll start, though, with the 30-06, which is actually my favorite of all the rifle cartridges out there. Note that all three of the cartridges I just mentioned, they're all pretty close in their capabilities. Oh, and one other thing. Let's get something out of the way first, okay? Any discussion of the 308 Win versus the 30-06, it's like Ford Chevy Dodge. It's almost like a holy war sometimes. And that's not what I'm doing here. The 308 Winchester is an excellent round. And if you choose that as your primary or your favorite cartridge, then you have chosen very well. It's been said that the 308 Winchester is to the rifleman, kind of like the 38 Special is, to the handgunner. And I agree totally with that statement. 100%. The 308 Win is very flexible, and it does most things well. For most North American game, the 308 Win is a fine choice. So if the 308 Win really is the rifle analog of the 38 Special, and I agree that it is, then the 30-06 is kind of like the 357 Magnum. The 357 Magnum does everything the 38 Special can do, and a bit more. Likewise with the 30-06. It has that extra bit of flexibility, especially on the heavier bullets end. Remember, folks, the 308 Win was designed to be effectively a shorter 30-06, especially the military 30-06 loadings. Same ballistics, same long-range capability, all that good stuff. In that, the 308 Winchester has succeeded wildly. That's one reason why our military snipers continue to use the round. It's not only accurate, it can reach out there and say hello. So, please understand, I'm not knocking the 308 Winchester at all. I shoot it myself, and I like it. Matter of fact, I like the cartridge well enough to reload for it, and we're going to discuss that in a few minutes. It's simply that when the designers of the 30-06 came up with that cartridge way back 116 years ago, in the year 1906, they happened to stumble upon a nearly perfect design that does almost everything really well. Yeah. You can even load it to start rivaling some of the 300 Winchester Magnum loadings if you use the right powder. If you use the right powder. And I have actually done this using Superformance powder and 180 to 200 grain bullets while still staying within the official pressure limits for the cartridge. Yeah, I'm not saying it equals the 300 Win Mag. I'm saying it starts to rival some of those loads. Turns out the 30-06 is one of those powders. Excuse me. Let me try that again. The 30-06 is one of the cartridges where Superformance powder, there we go, works very nicely. Now, you know, those loads do kick a bit more than the original military loadings used, you know, in the M1903 Springfield of World War I and the M1 Garand of World War II. Yeah, of course. You bet they kick a bit more. They're really for use in the strong, you know, bolt-action rifles like the Remington 700, Savage 110, Weatherby Vanguard, the Mark V, the Winchester 70, the Ruger M77 Hawkeye, and so on ad nauseum, etc. But even these more modern loads aren't really at all the shoulder busters or anything like that in a typical rifle. No. And no, it's not like I don't respect the 270 Winchester, for those of you familiar with that cartridge. It's simply that, well, I happen to standardize on the 7mm and the 30 caliber bullets. And my reloading gear, of course, reflects that. That's all. Those of you who shoot the 270 Winchester, well, guess what? That's another very good choice. For me, it's really the amazing flexibility of the 30-06 that fits the bill. I can go from 110 grain bullets to 220 grain bullets with the same cartridge. And assuming you design your load properly, you know, like using the right powder for your bullet, seating your bullet optimally, all that stuff, all of those bullets will do well out of any decent rifle. I can load the 30-06 down to the original military loadings or even lower to reduce recoil. And I have done that, especially with cast bullet loadings. Or I can make full house loads to hunt something like an elk or a moose. Even the big bag grizzly bear has fallen to the 30-06 on many occasions. And them things are big. Yeah, it can even do that reliably. So yeah, I mean, the old granddad, the 30-06 really is that cool of a cartridge. Yeah, there are other cartridges out there that can do some things better than the 30-06, of course. That's absolutely true. That newer cartridge, the 6.5 Creedmoor, that's another one out there that gets a lot of press. And for very good reason. It shoots flat. It goes the distance. But no other cartridge does them all as well as the 30-06. If you're going to pick one cartridge to do everything you need to do and do it well, this one probably is the best choice, especially if you're a hand loader. So, let's talk about loads for this great old cartridge. The M1 Garand. It's one of the most famous of all military surplus battle rifles. Might well be the most famous battle rifle in the world because of World War II and the USA's loaning of M1 Garands to a whole lot of countries after the war. I'm not talking about assault rifles. I'm talking about battle rifles now. Some years ago, I was able to actually build my own M1 Garand. That was at the Civilian Marksmanship Program's Advanced Maintenance class. This is where the armorers themselves at the CMP teach you how to do what they themselves do. Yeah, you learn how to build your own rifle from all the individual parts. Pretty cool, huh? That even includes the finish chambering, by the way. When you're done, you have built your very own special grade M1 Garand rifle. Now, the special grade is essentially a new gun because everything's reworked. Everything. The barrel is a brand new official CMP barrel manufactured by Criterion Barrels. Oh yeah, these new barrels, by the way, are official and canon. I asked the CMP folks about that while I was there, and they confirmed it face to face. Doesn't get better than that. My rifle, by the way, shoots very well. Of course, you'd expect so out of a rifle that's essentially a new rifle. But, as we know, you've got to use the right loads, namely the original military loads. Otherwise, you risk bending and messing up the operation rod. And that would be bad, since the op rod is the thing that actuates the rifle's semi-automatic action. And op rods are not so easy to come by anymore. So, the best powders for that rifle are going to be in the burn range of H4895, IMR4895, maybe Varget, and so on. Turns out Ball C2 or BLC2 also works well for this rifle. Also, your bullets need to be between 150 grains and 175 grains, though Hornady does list loads for their 178 grain bullets. I use these Hornady bullets in my rifle, and yes, I do stick to the listed Garand-specific loads. Those loads will get you out to 1,000 yards, so they're, don't underestimate them. Remember that the 308 Winchester, which is built to the same specs as the original military 30-06 loads, shoots accurately to 1,000 yards. So don't make the mistake of thinking those military loads are somehow weak once they hit. I assure you, they're not. Plenty of dead Nazis would testify to that if they were still alive. Wait. Point made? Ja, sehr gut. Oh, that means very good in German, if you didn't know. Now, for the bolt-action rifles, like, I don't know, we'll say the Remington 700, probably the most popular in the United States. For those kinds of rifles, I use, shall we say, a more stout load. A fellow named Herman Salazar wrote a bunch of material on his experiences shooting the 30-06 in high-power rifle competitions. Unfortunately, those web pages with all that great information are no longer up. However, fortunately, I was able to download them while they were still up, and I have learned and benefited from Mr. Salazar's wisdom on the subject. Of course, he shot his own hand loads, as virtually all competitors do. And yes, he won quite a few matches with his 30-06. So, you know, these folks out here claiming that the cartridge is somehow obsolete and outdated, they really don't know what they're talking about. Mr. Salazar appeared to favor the 200-grain bullets on top of a certain quantity of H4350 powder, which is a bit on the slower side of burn rates for use in the 30-06. But it's just about perfect for this heavier bullet. That's what he used to win a lot of his competitions. At the time, Hodgdon's Superformance powder had just recently become available to hand loaders, and it wasn't commonly used yet in the 30-06 or several other cartridges. Well, turns out that Superformance gives really good results in the 30-06 using the 178-grain Hornady match bullets. I know, because I've tried them. Uh-huh. The chronograph is showing right around 2,850 feet per second at the muzzle. Now, this is with both the AMAX and the Boattail hollow point. I haven't tried the newer ELD bullets just yet, but I expect similar results since the ELD is just the improved AMAX. Now, Superformance is a pretty specialized powder. But as Hodgdon, who makes it, says, where it works, it really works. And they're right. My Superformance load is about 50 to 100 feet per second faster than pretty much every other powder. Even the load books say this. The reloading manuals say this. If you read Lyman's 51st edition reloading manual, which came out this year, you'll see it confirmed there too. It's not just an accurate load, by the way. It's also a precise load. Yeah. When I'm actually shooting well, I've seen half a minute of angle out of my Winchester Model 70. The Savage 110 gives me similar results. It's just with slightly lower velocity. It hits about 2780 feet per second. And that's probably because of the barrel length difference. The Winchester 70 has a 24-inch barrel. The Savage 110 has a 22-inch barrel. You lose a couple of inches and thus a couple of points of velocity there. That's expected. Still fast, though. And by the way, if these numbers, you know, 2850 feet per second with a 178 grain, almost 180 grain bullet, if those numbers seem a little familiar to you, well, they should. They're dead smack in the middle of the speeds for the 300 Winchester Magnum. Well, yeah, I mean, sure, full tilt, the 300 Win Mag obviously will win the speed and power race. Duh, it's a bigger cartridge. It's never in question. No, never a question at all. Anyone who tries claiming that the 30-06 somehow just became the equal of the 300 Win Mag is a doggone fool. But the fact that the 30-06 now can actually nip at the 300 Win Mag's heels, well, that's quite an achievement. It means that in longer distance shooting, you stay above the transonic speeds for just a bit longer, which means a bit farther with your precision shooting. I would trust my Superformance loads to hit a game animal and drop it cleanly at 1,000 yards. Now, of course, that assumes A, proper marksmanship, and B, the right bullet. And at that distance, well, that's going to mean something like, you know, that expands at a fairly slow velocity, something like the Nosler Acubond long-range 190-grain bullet, which expands well all the way down to 1,300 feet per second. I wouldn't try that kind of hunting at that distance with any other bullet on a game animal unless I absolutely had to. And that means, you know, that means basically we have an end of civilization as we know it kind of situation, which fortunately is not the case. The point is, you can actually do it with a .30-06 today, right now. Doesn't seem so outdated to me. You know, I think I'll stick with it. It does a job even better now than it did back in the day. And a lot of dead Axis power soldiers learned just how effective it was even back then. Over the years, it's just gotten better and better. When we come back, we're also going to give some love to the .30-06's little brother, the .308 Winchester. That's another very fine cartridge that's been reaching out and getting the job done for several decades. We'll be back. Okay, we're back. We just got through discussing the virtues of the .30-06 cartridge, and there are many. That's why it's so doggone popular today, 116 years after it was introduced. Well, back in the 1940s and 50s, right after World War II, the U.S. military decided, well, they want to do some experiments with shortened .30-06 cartridges. You know, easier to carry more ammo for the troops and all that. The result was the .308 Winchester, which got adopted by the NATO powers as the 7.62 NATO cartridge in 1954. This is right at the end of the Korean War. Now, like with the .30-06, there are two sets of loadings for the .308 Winchester. There's the original hunting load from 1952, and then there's also the military load, known as the NATO load. The 7.62 NATO load is actually just slightly lower pressure than the civilian hunting load, so any rifle chambered for .308 Win will happily shoot 7.62 NATO loads as well. I suspect that the 7.62 NATO military surplus rifles out there will also handle the civilian hunting loads, but be careful with that, though. If you've got like a military surplus battle rifle, like, say, the M1A, that's the semi-automatic version of the M14 military rifle. Same goes for the FN FAL, the original SETME or H&K battle rifles, and similar. For those, I recommend sticking to the .308 Winchester service rifle sections of your reloading manual. Hornady's book has just such a section. It's pretty nice. Now, for the bolt-action rifles, though, that's different. You can use the full-power civilian hunting loads without any problems. In this role, the .308 Winchester is an excellent hunting cartridge. I use a 178-grain Hornady AMAX or the 180-grain Hornady SST. Both of these bullets shoot very well. Now, let's talk powder. Like with the .30-06, there are several powders that work well with this weight of a bullet, and the .308 Winchester also. The most commonly used by hand loaders is Varget because, well, it really is good stuff in the .308 Win. However, the original powder for the .308 Winchester is something called BL Type C, which stands for Ball Type C. The other name for that powder is WC-846. That's what the Lake City Arsenal traditionally has used, and I think they still use that today. The canister version, that is the version of it that we can buy from Hodgdon, is called BLC-2, also pronounced Ball-C-2, which simply means Hodgdon blended the various lots of military powder to keep a consistent burn rate for hand loaders like us. Now, some years ago, I managed to get my hands on some of the actual military powder, the WC-846, the military version. Yep, the unblended version of Ball-C-2. Turns out the powder lot I got is really close to the jugs of Ball-C-2 that you buy from Hodgdon. I bought that powder because, well, it was military surplus powder that was being sold relatively inexpensively. Actually, it was very inexpensively. It was a nice deal. Let me tell you, works just as well as the stuff in the jugs. I developed a load using the Ball C2 data in the book, you know, gradually working up until I hit the max load that the books listed. The primary bullet that I use for shooting practice is Hornady's 178 grain boat tail hollow point match bullet, because I got those on a really good sale too. Hey, hey. I also use Lake City Military Surplus Brass because, well, it's good brass that lasts a long time, and it's also available and affordable. Yeah, it's good stuff. I'm not seeing signs of excessive pressure, which means my load is safe. I'm getting about 2,600 feet per second with this load out of the Ruger American hunting rifle. Out of the Remington 700 Varmint, I'm up to about 2,700 feet per second, and this is due to its longer barrel. It's a 26-inch barrel versus a 22-inch barrel. Well, this is the load I practice with out to 1,000 yards, you know, when I get the chance. Both rifles seem to like this load. For each one of them, it appears to hit the rifle's accuracy node. Naturally, of course, I keep the brass for each rifle separated, you know, because of differences in chambers and such. But the load data happens to be the same for both rifles, to get the same level of precision. Basically, I got really lucky there. That is not normally the case. That usually doesn't happen. Unfortunately, though, WC-846 just doesn't seem to be nearly as available as it was when I bought it. So, means I'm glad I got plenty of it, because it's good stuff. It sure does the job. I would also trust this load, by the way, to hunt any game animal that the 308 Winchester should be hunting. Something like out east here, it's white-tailed deer, black bear, that sort of thing. I would even hunt moose at reasonable distances with my 308 Winchester 178 grain AMAX load. I would certainly hunt elk. So we got two cartridges which get the job done here in fine fashion. Which one do you choose? Man, I mean, that's like, do you choose Toyota or Honda? You know, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, you know, like we mentioned before. Or on the higher end, Mercedes, BMW, or Audi. Really, folks, that's how it is. They're both very good cartridges. And you really can't go wrong with either one. Here's how I would choose, and how I would recommend maybe you consider choosing. If you're planning on hunting elk, say elk or moose, you know, the bigger animals, I would go with the 30-06 just for the extra power that you get. Those are some pretty big animals. Can you do it with a 308 Winchester? Yes, of course. But if you're out there in the prairies where the elk can see you from a pretty long ways away, you might have to shoot from a bit farther away. In that case, on big animals like those, you might want the extra thump that, say, the 200 grain or even the 220 grain bullet gives you. In that case, go for the 30-06. However, if you're planning on doing a lot of shooting, you're going to need affordable components, especially affordable brass. There, no question. The 308 Winchester wins that one just because of inexpensive and high-quality military surplus cases from Lake City. The only area where the 308 Win doesn't really do quite as well as the 30-06 is with the 200 grain and heavier bullets. But up to 190 grains, the 308 Winchester shines pretty much just as brightly. It's sort of like, do you buy a Honda Accord or a Honda Odyssey minivan? The Accord in this case would be the 308 Winchester, and the Odyssey minivan would be the 30-06 Springfield. For you Toyota fans, the equivalent analogy would be, say, a Camry versus a Sienna minivan. So which one do I have? Well, I couldn't decide which one, so I bought both. Yep, my first bolt-action rifle was a Savage 110 in 30-06. Shortly after that, I bought the Ruger American in 308 Win. I like and enjoy both of them. Now, if I could have only one rifle, then yes, I would choose the 30-06 for its extreme level of flexibility. But the 308 Win would be so close behind it as to be able to read the label that says machine wash cold. They're both very good. Now, when we come back, we'll get to another little bolt action project involving the Mosin Nagant rifle. This is really fun, you know, getting to save and restore an old military surplus rifle. It's sort of a, well, it's not sort of, it really is. It's a full-blown modernization of an old classic. Stick around. I think you'll enjoy this. Welcome back, Tovarishes. Is comrade for you English speakers. We're back to discuss glorious Vintovka Mosina, also known as Mosin Rifle. A Mosin Nagant in decadent vest. The Mosin Nagant Rifle. Oh man, what a history this rifle has. And not only just in Mother Russia. It's been said, correctly, that it's the only rifle to fight against itself in multiple wars and win every time. Oh, man. This is a rifle that got started back in 1891. The cartridge for this rifle, the 7.62x54R Russian cartridge, is, as far as I know, the oldest still active military cartridge in existence. It's been serving in Eastern European armies for, what, 131 years now? Yeah. Crazy. Oh, and it's the only rimmed rifle cartridge that's still doing that, by the way. Yeah, it's a rimmed rifle cartridge. Yeah. Still going. Today's Russia continues to use it in its army. Today, right now. You know, heck, old Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin, the bully who runs Russia at the present moment, is issuing them to his troops today. Yeah, you know the troops he's ordered to invade Ukraine like he did? It's another long story. Anyway, Russia and other former communist bloc countries also continue to use this cartridge in their machine guns. It's basically their equivalents of our M60. Well, guess who else made these rifles? Yeah, other people made these rifles too. Among them is China. Yeah, China. During the 1950s, remember, the Soviet Union and Red China were kind of buddy-buddy, and there was a lot of exchange between the two nations. And from the Soviets, China got the designs for the AK-47 and the Mosin Nagant rifles. China made plenty of Mosins. Well, I got my hands on one of these Chinese Mosins. Well, it was really more like a barreled receiver. The receiver was stripped, and the barrel had, oh, about as much rifling left in it as an old sewer pipe. There was no way it was ever going to shoot well again in the condition that I got it. Here's the thing. This barreled receiver was $20. Yeah, $20. So I decided, I'm going to do something with this. I'm going to turn it into something nice to shoot. Nothing to lose. So I picked up the phone and called McGowan Barrels. Turns out they have a bit of a specialty in working on Mosin rifles. I explained what I wanted to do, which was as follows. 1. Put a new 26-inch barrel with the following characteristics. Material is 4140 chrome moly, in other words, blued. 26-inch barrel length. A 308 bore with a 110 twist. A 7.62x54R standard chambering. Mosin Nagant Finnish M39 contour. I'm using the Finnish M39 barrel contour for this. I put some muzzle threading on it, 5/8x24, you know, threads per inch, the standard rifle threading that you see, with a thread cap, 11-degree crowning, and of course, polished blued. 2. Re-blue the receiver and the magazine as well. 3. Install a rifle scope mount on it. They said they could do it. No problem. Well, great. So, of course, it got packed well, and, you know, ready to ship, and off it went. By the way, I should note that, yes, you can ship long guns through the U.S. Post Office. They won't do handguns because they're easily concealable, but they will do long guns. Additionally, I bought a Timney trigger, a Finnish Mosin magazine, this is from Liberty Tree Collectors, a complete bolt assembly, and some pillar bedding that would be compatible with the Timney trigger. All of this got sent with the rifle. Well, I should say the barreled action. Well, a few months later, I got the barreled action back. Well, it looked a lot more like a rifle than when I first sent it. Let me tell you, it looks good. It's got a Picatinny scope mount from Rock Solid Industries on it, and the mount does seem very solid. What that also means is that McGowan Barrels drilled and tapped the receiver for this mount. It's on there pretty solidly. Oh, it's also got a cap for the barrel threads, you know, to protect those threads while we're waiting for the Hearing Protection Act to become law, and I really hope that it does. We really need that, folks, by the way, just to keep the enormous roar that a rifle produces, you know, down to just under ear-destroying levels. You know, by the way, sound suppressors, or silencers, as they're also called, they're really more like car mufflers. They don't actually silence a firearm at all. Not even close. I mean, that's Hollywood, folks. And real life ain't like the movies. All they do is just reduce the sound to where it might not damage your ears, but it's still very loud. So the Hearing Protection Act would be a very good thing for us all. And that's why I got the threading on the barrel. Well, the bolt is, of course, fully bone stock. Though I am having one change made to the bolt handle. Instead of the straight-out bolt handle like you see in a lot of the older military surplus rifles, I'm going to have it bent, quote-unquote bent, to be more like a Remington 700, Winchester 70, or Savage 10, 110 rifle. The reason those companies do that with the bolt handles is so that they clear the rifle scope mount, which those newer rifles typically have. And I'm having mine modified for exactly the same reason. It's to clear the rifle scope mount. This is so you can actually open and close the bolt properly with the scope on there, which is kind of a nice thing to be able to do. So, the bolt handle went off to Jim the Bolt Man Robert for that bolt handle modification. The rifle stock, it's a wooden type. It's from Boyd's Rifle Stocks in classic walnut. Can't beat walnut. I took a Dremel and did a little inletting to fit the Timney trigger in the pillar bedding. Fits pretty well. I might bed the action later, but first I want to try it as it is. You know, get to know the rifle a bit first before you start really, really tinkering with it. By the way, the sharp-eared of you, the sharp-eared will note that earlier I mentioned a 308 bore on this new barrel. Yeah, huh? You're wondering, hey, isn't that a little small for a Mosin? Ordinarily, yes, because Mosins generally come with 310 barrels per the original spec. This is how they were designed back in 1891. My bore, though, is 308. Yeah, what's the deal? Well, here's the deal. It's so I can use the excellent 308-inch, .308-inch bullets, you know, the same ones you'd use for the 308 Winchester and the 30-06 Springfield. I have some good bullets here, folks, from Hornady, Sierra, Spear, and such like that. Getting good, you know, 0.310-inch bullets here in the United States is a bit more of a challenge. But getting high-quality 308 bullets is generally very easy. And by the way, there is precedent, historical precedent, for doing this on a Mosin. Turns out the Finnish did it with their M27 variant of the Mosin. Yeah. You see, Finland used Mosins because they used to be a Russian duchy way, way back in the day. I'm talking about Imperial Russia when they had, you know, the czars and such. Yeah. So when Finland became independent, they, of course, used the Mosins that the Imperial Armory had supplied to them. They also rebuilt and reworked them for even greater accuracy than they already had. As the Winter War and the Continuation War showed Stalin's Soviet troops, Finland succeeded in that goal. They're a free nation today because of it. At present, I'm still waiting for Jim the Boltman to get the modified bolt handle back to me. And when I do get it back, I'll be able to take it out shooting and see how it does. I'm looking forward to this. So, my goal was essentially to create, well, shall we say, a Finnish M27 with a very strong American accent. The fact that the bore is 308, like American 30 caliber rifles are, it means that this rifle is definitely a handloader's proposition, though. Since I don't have the bolt back yet, I don't know if it'll actually chamber Russian spec 7.62x54R rounds, which do use the 310 bullet. I already have the components, so it's just a matter of finding out what this rifle will like. Like I said, I'm definitely looking forward to this. And I got to tell you something else. When I look at this rifle, I cannot help but think of those Finnish soldiers who held off Stalin's Red Army hordes during World War II. By now, a lot of people have learned of their greatest marksman, Simo Häyhä, the greatest sniper who ever walked planet Earth. It's actually his rifle that I've patterned my own off of, you know, with the obvious difference of a rifle scope mount, which Mr. Häyhä didn't use. After Finland got its independence, and after the Bolsheviks took over Russia and created the Soviet Union, the Soviets told the Finns, "Oh, you don't need those rifles. You got nothing to worry about. Go ahead and get rid of them." Yeah, right. Fortunately, the Finns didn't follow that advice. So when Stalin made his intentions clear and invaded Finland, well, the Finns pulled all those rifles out of storage and armed their people. Tiny Finland. Well, population-wise, they're tiny compared to Russia. Tiny Finland held off the Red Army hordes, and a lot of times the Finns were outnumbered 10-1. They still got the job done. Stalin had no choice but to call his troops away from Finland and let them be. This, folks, is what I think about when I see that rifle. I think about every fight for freedom from tyranny that's ever happened in the world, including our own here to create the United States of America. Very, very few movements for independence happened without having to fight the tyrant's army. India is one of those few exceptions, by the way, and that's because Mohandas Gandhi was just next level. But that's not how it generally goes. Generally, you have to fight for your freedom. Any Ukrainian will tell you all about that today. Oppressors will do anything and everything to keep their power over those people. That's where gun control comes from, folks. You know, the leaders who institute gun control, they know how difficult it is to oppress an armed populace. That's why even the combined armies of both Hitler and Mussolini didn't try their luck with Switzerland. They knew good and well what the Swiss people were capable of. It's really as a Swiss man himself put it. Listen to this.
But it wasn't the militia that sparked Haim's interest in guns as a young man. It was an unassuming trip to a Holocaust museum.
I was going through all the exhibits and the soap and the lampshades made of people's skin. And while I was looking, I heard a funny noise. And there was an old woman, maybe 2 meters from me. And she was trying not to cry. She was sort of sobbing very quietly. She was holding it back. If she had been a few meters further away, I wouldn't have heard her. And she obviously had gone through that. That's when the whole impact of it hit me. And I promised myself I would never be in her situation. I would want to be free, never in a situation where somebody could, you know, march us off to ovens or prisons or just take away our freedom. The key to freedom is the ability to be able to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, then you are at the mercy of whoever wants to put you away. And the tools for that are guns.
And that's what I think of when I look at that rebuilt Mosin rifle. It means freedom. As the Ukrainians say, Russian warship, go F yourself. This is Cowboy T signing off. Until next time, till then, safe shooting, practice your marksmanship, stand up for your rights, and thanks for listening.